Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Mike Cosentino here. Steve Williamson's on vacation. We are thought provoking, as he just said today. We're provoking thoughts on the Women's March in Sedona, and some other local activist activities. We have a couple of people in the studio. We have Kathy Kinsella and Holly Plouf, and we are going to be talking about lots of. And later on in the show, we got Jan Nichols calling in. Jan is from Phoenix, and she's an expert on charter schools. And as far as Arizona, we're talking about the corruption of charter schools. But we'll talk about that later. Lots of good information. I want to remind you about the Arizona Republic article that said that 100 charter schools, one out of four charter schools are going to close this year in Arizona for financial reasons. If that interests you, please stay tuned. But right now we're going to talk about some local activities. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
I am barely adequate.
Are you ready to come with us in March next week?
Well, I'm praying for freezing rain, you know.
That would be our tradition. But actually,
exactly.
You know, we've actually made, since the first march happened in 2017, following the 2016 election, there's actually been real change and real progress by people coming together and getting active. This was after the 2016 election. We've just had unprecedented numbers of people forming new organizations, joining existing organizations, getting together and voicing the call for change. And, you know, indicative of that change this year is the fact that this March, the third annual March, is going to have good weather.
Well, that's good. That was on my imaginary list here to ask you. This is the third year for the Sedona Women's March, and that's the official name. And the first year, because of the election of Donald Trump, I could not think of anybody more anti-woman or anyone more that women should march against. And yet here we are 3 years later, and we still have issues.
Yes. We find that marches are a great way to bring communities together. And again, this is the third annual Women's March. It's happening Saturday, January 19th, the Saturday coming, 1 p.m., leaving from Arizona National Bank, which is next to Whole Foods. And we're going to march down 89A. The theme of this year's march is wave, women's wave. And we hope to look like a wave, a sea of women and men supporting women walking down 89A to a rally at Vino di Sedona.
There you go.
At that rally, we'll be talking a lot about what's happened since that 2016 election. Because, yes, that was the galvanizing force that brought people out in utter disbelief that you could be elected to such a high office while saying such violent anti-woman, anti-immigrant, anti-tolerance rhetoric. But that did happen. People were shocked, but the shock woke them up.
Yeah.
So it was a shock wave.
Yeah, that's true. We've had the shock wave, and now we're going to have the women's wave.
And now we've had progress. I mean, look at this past election. We're at an all-time record high of women in Congress, 102 women in Congress. But before you get too excited about 102 women in Congress, realize that that's still less than 25% of Congress.
Yeah, yeah.
So although great strides have been made and we're happy to be breaking records, there's still room for improvement and there's still room to come to the table. Because we really believe that in order to have your voice heard, you have to be seated at the table.
Yeah, the truth is at 25%, that's about half of what some people might think it should be. If it's reflective of the population, it should be around 50%. I think in Yavapai County, there's 52 or 53, 54% women, 46, 47% men. So it is easy to get excited about 25% because we always think of it as a bastion of white men. But Congress finally is beginning to reflect the people they represent. Very exciting.
It's the national level in Congress. It's also the state of Arizona. The legislature, the new legislature that took office this year, is the most diverse in Arizona's history.
That's another one. And there's more Democrats than there have been before. So that's the other thing, I think, as far as Democratic perspective, this edition of Democratic perspective, we want to say that Democrats in Arizona are going to have to be listened to more, because the numbers are, although not in the majority, you know, the 31-29 in the House and the 16-14 in the Senate means that
The gap is getting smaller.
The gap is getting small. When I was listening to the Journalists Roundtable, which I always do mostly do anyway, on Horizon, on PBS, on Friday nights, and I think it was a lady from the Arizona Capital Times said, they will not be able to go to the bathroom. They will not be able to just stay home sick. They will have to be there to vote, because the Democrats will be there. And any time there's any less than their majority, then something could actually get passed. So you're going to see things coming from the Democrats on the state level. And I think because of what Kathy just said, the diversity, you're going to see way a more diverse set of laws that people actually care about, and certainly something that supports populations.
I think you'll see more communication. Things will open up, there'll be real dialogue on issues, because they need each other. They need each other to pass things. They actually, you know, when you bring everybody to the table and they're there and it's not just dominated by one, you get a better conversation. So, I mean, hopefully this will move things along for our
state. Let me talk about Kathy Kinsella. Kathy's been on the show many times before. And actually, I'm not going to talk. I'm going to get Kathy to talk about it. You wear a lot of hats, Kathy. You are the definition of local activist.
Oh, well, yes, I do wear a lot of hats. I am here today in the role as an organizer of Women's March. I've been involved with Women's March since the first one that we did in 2017. But, yep, I do. I work with League of Women Voters, with Democrats with the Red Rocks, volunteer for local food issues and various other, many other, I can't even name them all.
And many more.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, and as such, you know, to be honest, she's a great resource for Democratic perspective. And we use her as such. Just to be clear again, this Saturday, folks, if you've been following it on Facebook or any place else for that matter, Women's March is finally coming. They've been planning a long time. They've made signs. On the 19th, starting at 1 p.m., we're going to start at the National Bank right here in Sedona. Mm-hmm. We're going to walk to Vino de Sedona and have the speeches after. If you've been to the previous ones, this is kind of a change. The rally will be afterwards, which means it'll delay my wine drinking, but I suppose I could...
We always find that people are anxious to get started. They want to march. They want to get going. So we don't want to bog it down at the beginning. We want people to be able to get their Fitbit steps in for that day.
There you go.
And then at Vino di Sedona, there's going to be a lot of conversation there that's important conversation. And there'll be music and entertainment. We've got a couple of really good acts, certainly a wonderful environment to do that in. We're going to have different groups that are active that speak, so that people can find if there's an organization that speaks to them that they want to get involved in. And our sort of keynote is going to be Holly is with us today, and Holly's going to be talking to us there about the Equal Rights Amendment and the importance of finally getting that passed.
You want to give us a little preview, Holly?
Sure. You know, the Equal Rights Amendment started in 1972, and it needs any constitutional amendment needs 38 states to pass to become effective.
Right.
And right now, with Illinois passing the ERA this past year in the spring, there's only one more state
really? That
is needed.
This is kind of a stealth thing going on.
Yeah, and there are several candidates for which states those could be, and Arizona is one of them.
I'll be darned. Is there but there's no time limit? So 38 states?
So there is a time limit. Originally, it was 7 years, and then Congress extended it to 10 years, which would have been 1982. But Congress has the ability to eliminate the deadline. There's no constitutional reason to have a deadline. So this was just something that was done by Congress. And there is case law that says that even a deadline may not even be, you know, constitutional, actually. So there are one more state were to pass the ERA, then it would flip over to the Congress to decide what to do about that. since the deadline has passed.
All right.
But, you know, every year there have been bills that have been introduced either by the Senate or the House in the state of Arizona that would make Arizona pass the ERA. And this year it would be the last state to pass the ERA. But they had never been heard. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And the last time, in 2018, the committee chairman just declared a recess of the House.
Oh.
And that was the end of the term.
I see.
It is really important that we convince our friends in the legislature, the committee chairman, that this is an important issue to be heard. We don't have the support of the Republicans, but we do have support of the people, which is even more important, right?
There you go.
So
I like to think so, but I'm not sure.
So we want Arizona to be the last state. We think that would be
the one that puts it over the top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have every intention this year of being an advocate for that to happen.
Well, that would be a great role for Arizona to play, to put the ERA over the top. Real quickly, my memory of the ERA battle in the 70s and beyond was that the Equal Rights Amendment, it wasn't many words, just... Why is it necessary? Isn't it redundant? That was the big argument at the time.
Right. It's not redundant, but here it is, simply.
Go ahead, please.
Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the U.S. or by any state on account of sex.
There you go.
It's pretty simple.
The whole thing.
Pretty simple. And that is an argument that has been... The opponents have used, well, we've got all these other laws, but we don't. We have piecemeal, a lot of laws, right, and they don't cover the entire scope of equality.
Well, it doesn't, I take a constitutional scholar, quite frankly, to see how important having that at the constitutional amendment level would, especially now with all of the Ruth Bader Ginsburg information coming out. And maybe this is something that women's activists have known for a long time, but certainly many of us had no idea that notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, on the Supreme Court was as influential as she has been. I mean, we're talking about if you go into law or politics to change the world, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has changed the world forever. And not many people can make that claim. If you haven't seen some of this, these documentaries and things, find some information on Ruth Bader Ginsburg and be inspired and feel a little bit good. In these times, it's sometimes a little bit hard with the children squabbling in Washington as they are, and it affecting so many lives. We're talking day 26, I think, of the shutdown. 800,000 people out of a job
on the unemployment
line, out of paychecks anyway. Yes, and I can, speaking for myself, there is nothing worse than being out of work. I'm sure there's things worse, but there is such a horrible feeling of having no income, such a desperation.
Meanwhile, Congress gets paid.
Such a lowness, and especially to have somebody have it happen like this. The frustration would be...
Well, being forced to work and not necessarily knowing whether you were going to get paid initially.
Wow.
And then when Congress passed the bill for retroactive pay, there were only 5 votes against it, and 2 of them were from Arizona. 2 congressmen from Arizona.
Yeah, Andy Biggs and...
Gosar.
Yeah, our guy. Yeah.
Your guy, that's right.
Yeah.
So can you imagine that? We have to turn this humiliation into positive action.
Yeah.
But there is a change in the Southwest, in Arizona specifically, which again is why it would be so satisfying to have the ERA passed at the hands of Arizona.
It really would.
I mean, it really would, because it would cement that change that we knew and sensed it, but the last election, really, with the election of Kyrsten Sinema and in Nevada, when you look at Jackie Rosen being elected, I mean, you can see the Southwest changing, and that deep red affiliation is really, there's a lot more, there's a lot of change out there and a lot of people that are willing to cross party lines and people that are looking at issues rather than just a party affiliation. And that's a good move for Arizona.
I have been sending, you know, we have two women Arizona senators.
We do.
Regardless of, you know, the other's misguided party affiliation, McSally, Martha McSally is Arizona senator. She was appointed. We have two women representing Arizona in the six-year Senate terms in Washington. And I want to remind folks and these activists also that I use the 50409 bot a lot. You text 50409 and a automatic, you're taken through on contacting your representatives, in this case McSally and Sinema, mm-hmm. and there are people in Congress, at least your representatives, Gosar in this case.
And O'Halloran for us.
Oh, thank you. And they're trying to expand it all the time. But the point is that for the last 2 years, I sent Jeff Flake daily almost little notes through the 50409. I texted 50409, bot. It's free. And I send him messages every day, reminding him of his legacy, telling him what a horrible, horrible man Trump was. And so I believe I am personally responsible, Mike Cosentino, on Democratic Perspective, personally responsible for the change in Jeff Flake because of
the power of Mike at the mic.
Power of Mike at the mic and on his phone via text that I sent all these warm little notes to Jeff. Just short of calling him names and ignorant, and how could he possibly support this maniac that's in the White House, this psychopath that's obviously needs mental health work rather than a wall. So now I'm doing the same favor for Martha McSally. I thought you'd be happy to know. And I'm sure Martha's happy to hear that.
See, Mike, you don't discriminate.
That's right. All right, folks, we got our next segment coming in here. We're going to talk about the corruption of Arizona charter schools. Now, are there Arizona charter schools that are working just fine and are good things for kids? Absolutely. I have had personal experience with some, and it's well known. The idea of having an educational laboratory with less regulation in order to try things was a good idea, but it has been subverted. And we have a guest this morning that is going to tell us a little bit about how that idea of charter schools has been subverted. Jan Nichols, are you there?
I am here, Michael. Can you hear me?
Hear you great. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, yeah. So I want to. We have. Don't forget, you will. We got Mike Cosentino here. You're on Democratic Perspective. Good morning. We have Holly and Kathy are also here. Going to be maybe shooting some questions at you. I got my substitute co-hosts here. Because Steve is out playing on the beach in California, I think.
You got your posse with you.
Yes, my posse. There you go. I like that. So they don't, but I do. Listen, what you just came from a great presentation in Denver to NEA. What did you tell NEA?
No. I am going in March.
You're preparing your
NEA leadership conference.
Let me change that. You're preparing your presentation.
I'm preparing.
So what are you going to tell NEA?
I had to prepare differently because I have been doing most of my presentations about Arizona, basically, and then just putting a little bit of the national perspective in, but this had to change because these are teachers from all over the nation, so I had to change it and come from the perspective of what's happening at the national level, and so I had to do a lot of research and go into my cave and do just research on Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, Wisconsin, Michigan, etc. And the further you go down the rabbit hole, the worse it gets.
So all these states have charter school laws like Arizona's?
Yes. I think it's 46 states
wow.
in the nation have charter schools. And in Michigan, for instance, Betsy DeVos has taken over the charter schools there, and they are they have taken over 80% of the schools are charter, and most of them are for profit.
So let me get this straight: the Secretary of Education, the Trump appointment, who has. And her home state of Michigan has 80% charter schools, and they're for profit.
Yeah, I wasn't ready to talk about that particular one.
Good, let's talk about Arizona.
On that, but I think it's about 80%, and she's taken over.
Got it. Let's talk about Arizona.
Destroyed the public school system, which was a great public school system.
But now I saw in the Republic the other day that one out of four charter schools is in financial trouble. Why are they in financial trouble? The state gives them our tax money, as far as I'm concerned, to support what ideally would be these educational laboratories, but quite frankly has become these places where they it's all about discrimination. They don't want. You can start a charter school and keep your kids from going to school with brown kids. You can start a charter school and keep only Mormons in there or only Baptists. It's the, quite frankly, the dumbest thing in public education I've ever seen come down the road. But you've done some research. Tell us what's going on.
Well, what has happened is it basically we have a system where the public schools are held accountable. They're transparent. If you want to know anything about the public schools, we have public elected officials that run a school board. It's all public information. You can go, I told kids that I made $100,000 a year. If you don't believe me, you can check it out on the public records, you know,
right.
Which is, you know, I was teasing them. And I said I got a bonus of $1 million to teach. So everything is accountable and everything is transparent, which is not so in the charter school system. Charters get money. And what happens is the federal government sends money to the state. The state allocates it to charter schools. And then they also get assistance from basically everybody, the city, the state, the city. They get incentives. They get property taxes, sales tax abatements, everything. And then we know how much they get. They are required to get certain reports to the state, which we find out that they don't actually turn those reports in, or if they do, they're not read. And one of the reasons is it's not audited is because the state cut staff in 2000, when we went into the recession. Excuse me. We ran into the recession, and what happened is everything was cut, including auditing, et cetera. So the nonprofit this gives money, and they establish a charter. And you have to send in your documents of what you wish to do with this, how you're going to change what it is that you're going to do with your charter that's going to be different and be for education. If accepted, then you get the money from the state, you get money from the federal government. But what they do then is they set, like BASIS did, BASIS established a nonprofit. But then they saw all these other new laws that were being passed for investment purposes, such as the New Market Credit and the EB-5.
BASIS is a charter school operator in Arizona?
This is everybody in investments. And then they said, okay.
How do you make money at a charter school? How can I make money at a charter school?
Huh?
How can I make money running a charter school?
You can establish your charter school.
Yep.
And then you can hire an educational management organization. And when you establish your educational management organization, you can then, that's a private business. and it can't be audited by the state.
And it can't be audited?
No. It's a private business. So you can do whatever you want. You can hire the faculty. You can make investments. You can do all sorts of things.
So I can hire my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, my best friend?
Absolutely, because there are no procurement laws. There are no regulations on how many charters you can establish. No matter, they don't care how you invest it. They don't care who you hire to do the work. You can get non-certified teachers. It goes on and on.
And is there a standard of the education that's given? Are there, you know, test standards? Are there, how are the schools graded? How are the schools watchdogged in terms of the education they're providing to the children?
Not very much. They are tested. They are tested by the state test. And sometimes, for instance, BASIS, I just give you BASIS because everybody knows BASIS.
Well, not everybody. Perhaps you should tell us a little bit about it. Some of the listeners may not.
Okay. Michael Block, and I use BASIS because Michael Block was a professor at the U of A. He and his wife formed BASIS something in like 1998, something like that. And what he did was he established it as a nonprofit. And he went in there and they hired teachers who had credentials and they worked it. Then they decided to establish a for-profit, which is an EMO, Educational Management Organization. He then became not only the CEO of the nonprofit, he became head of the, he was on the board of directors. So his asset, they decided who they hired, who they collected rent from, they mortgaged, their support staff, the curriculum, the textbooks. They make all the decisions. Their profits grew from $13 million to $122 million between 2003 and 2009. Now they are so profitable, except they are in the red, that they can invest in other properties such as a townhouse in Manhattan for the tune of, I think it's $8.1 million. Don't quote me on that one. But they are... and their administration.
Jan Nichols. You just said BASIS charter schools, the most mm-hmm. profitable in Arizona, the largest, is in the red.
Yes, they are in the red, and what they do is they take that money in the for profit, they invest it, and they invest it heavily in properties, other properties, starting other schools, and they come in they invest in those properties, they have mortgages, and they move that money around, and sometimes that money moved around is not always profitable to them. But it is profitable to the CEO because the CEO makes a lot of money.
The Grand Canyon Institute says that, as I said when we started talking, that over 100 charter schools are in financial trouble in Arizona, and they expect them to start closing. The head of the Charter School Association in Arizona says no, but the Charter School Association allows them to operate in financial trouble.
Right.
So they may or may not close. It talks about... The Grand Canyon Institute report said that one-third of charter schools are losing enrollment, except for the charter school that you're talking about. BASIS got 5,000 new students in the last few years. And yet they are still in financial trouble. One of the reasons that you piqued my interest with the charter school discussion, which we've been having for a long time, here it is 2018, I remember, you know, this in Arizona in 1998, this really started coming on. That does seem to have leveled out a little bit, but as this gets discovered as this moneymaker, rather than it has nothing to do with education, it has everything to do with making money for its owners, and being able to be discriminatory. Tell us about the gentleman.
Here's the thing.
Yes, please.
Anybody with or without qualifications can apply and operate a charter school and get public funding. For instance, Would you say that Pitbull is really Mr. Education? Is he really qualified?
Who?
Pitbull.
Pitbull. He's one of the most famous musicians out there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Pitbull.
He has a charter school in Henderson, Nevada. He has one in Florida, in Miami. Andre Agassi, you know him very well from all his educational professional publications, I'm sure. He has chain charters, College Preparatory Academy, middle school. We also have our former Kevin Johnson, who was a Phoenix Sun, who married Michelle Rhee, who was chancellor of the Washington schools, and she destroyed public education in the schools.
So how do we change things? How do we improve the educational system here? How do we address that some charter schools might be providing an adequate education and most are probably not because of a lack of oversight that you've mentioned? So how do we change that? Are there bills pending that people should get behind? Or what can we do to improve education? Because education is one of the most important issues on the minds of Arizonans.
Okay, very important. There's only one way to do it, and that is to change the laws. Okay, some of the laws that need to be changed. There are no procurement laws, so they can give it to the highest bidder, and it can be their brother. There's no conflict of interest laws. There's no caps on growth. There's no limit to how many charters a person can own. And even they like bribes and gifts, which are happening also. That was written into the 2018 legislation that ended with Prop 305, that bribes and gifts were okay. So here's what we need to do. Reginald Boulding, who's in the House of Representatives, is on the Education Committee. He has a couple of bills, and I'm trying to remember. I was coming on originally to talk about Fethullah Gulen, but he has a number of bills that are going to address these problems. He is a Democrat in the House. Kate Brophy McGee, who is a Republican, has also got some bills. And between the two of them, they're going to talk about caps on the number of charters, which there are no caps now. He's going to talk about procurement laws, and we're talking about making things fair, which is rules and regulations the same as public district schools.
So there is legislation being considered.
Yes. Yes, there are several people in the House and have already got bills ready to go.
So one of the things that piqued my interest when we talked before the show was the what I think you just referred to, the madrasas, the Muslim schools. Can you tell us about those?
Well, I don't know about madrasa schools, but I do know about the Fethullah Gulen.
Fethullah
Gulen is a Turkish imam living in exile in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I think most people have read the story about the Turkish coup a couple of years ago when they had two factions. There was a rise up on one of the bridges there, and there was an attempted coup.
Erdogan was the winner. This guy was the loser. Is that the?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, well, but he was already over here. Now, it's a murky and secretive lot these people are, because Erdogan and Gulen used to be best buddies.
Uh-huh.
And something happened, and no one seems to really know, but there was a power struggle, and they parted their ways, but they haven't parted their ways as far as being friends. They're still massively enemies, and they are, we have him over here, Gulen is over here, living in the Poconos Mountains, living in Sailorsville, Pennsylvania, in a great big compound. On the second floor, he has his acolytes. He is an imam, so he trains the acolytes there.
What's this got to do with charter schools?
Well, he has the second largest charter chain in the United States.
That's what it's got to do with charter schools.
That's what it has to do. And one of them, we have nine in Arizona, but he's got the second largest charter chain in the United States, except for the first is the Walton Foundation, KIPP, Knowledge is Personal Power. They have the first largest, and then Gulen.
So Gulen has nine charter schools in Arizona.
Yes, and one of them is on Davis-Monson Air Force Base. It is a very secretive organization. The teachers there are mainly Muslim men. Now, that's just a fact. And they have come over on H-1B visas. And they pay men more than women. They have some women on staff, but they pay the men more than women. In some cases, they have even violated the H-1B visa laws. They have also funded junkets to over 200 junkets to Turkey for our politicians, of which Matt Salmon was one in Arizona. And they've also been known to fund some congressional campaigns.
So the charter school guy is paying for Arizona legislatures to go to Turkey?
Over 200 different politicians, and that includes some people on boards of education. It includes Congress people, and we have a list of like.
So what are they doing that would be of interest to Matt Salmon in a charter school? I just don't get the connection. Why would an Arizona legislature or any of the other 200 for that matter want to go to Turkey?
I don't know. Well, Barbara Lee in Texas, who's a Democrat, she went, and her cohort on the state level, Dr. Allen, went, and Dr. Allen said, "Oh, it's a beautiful trip. It's a wonderful trip." And someone said, "Well, why did you go?" "Because it was offered." Now, it was approved by the committee on ethics.
Who's Dr. Allen?
It was approved.
Who's Dr. Allen?
Dr. Allen is a member. Oh, boy, who would ask? I don't have all that right in front of me. She is a member of the state legislature in Texas, or was.
Okay.
I'm not sure she is now. But Barbara Lee.
Yes, because we have our own Allen here, which is Sylvia Allen,
the
Arizona state education chair.
Sylvia Allen.
Yeah. So that's why we're asking for that clarification.
Yeah. Sylvia Allen is the Senate education chair. She was. She is. I used her also because she founded George Washington Academy along with other people in Snowflake.
Yeah.
And she has no educational qualifications other than she, helped jointly own the Washington Academy. They sold out to Ed Key, who, by the way, is one of those that was listed in that report that you read that said that they were having financial difficulties.
It's a complicated issue with a trail. But let's get back to, again, what's happening here in Arizona at the state legislative level. Because, we're asking, when you see a problem on education, on healthcare, on anything, we want to ask, so what can people do to change it? And people should be involved in the legislative process. So how can they do that on these issues if these are the issues that speak to them?
Okay, they can go on request to speak at the Arizona legislature. They will take you, if you Google it, at the Arizona State Legislature, you can go on there. And you can actually read some of the legislation that is being proposed. And you can sign up at request to speak. I'm not sure if you have to go down there right now.
Well, actually, let me interrupt you on that for 1 second, only because that's really important, that people don't know sometimes how easy it is to actually lobby. It sounds like, ooh, lobby is this, big term. But all you really need is just some education on the issue you want to speak about and to understand the ways that you can speak and voice your concern. And the League of Women Voters of Arizona is actually doing an advocacy training workshop that's going to be Monday, January 28th from 4 o'clock to 5:30 at Yavapai College at the Verde campus, the one in Clarkdale on Black Hills Drive. And that is going to take people through first of all, understanding the bill process, the role of power, party, and culture, the mechanics of getting a bill passed, theoretically and in actuality. And it's going to talk about, you know, computer power, including the request to speak, which is, yes, a way that you register, that you can then log in through your registration and comment on the various bills that are there, specific bills that you're interested in. So this training session that the League of Women Voters is hosting at Yavapai College is going to go over how you can register for request to speak, get signed up to that, and also how to work within the system, like what to say and how to say it when you are interested, when you do want to speak out on an issue.
We are listening to Kathy Kinsella and Jan Nichols. One of the things we think speaking out on would be a good idea as the charter school corruption in Arizona. We got Jan Nichols talking to us about and trying to sort out this extremely complicated situation that they set up. And this is, by the way, intentional. But we got Jan Nichols telling us who's who and what's what. But we got the Grand Canyon Institute report recently, if we piqued your interest with this topic. That reporting that the things like there's $2.56 billion in charter school debt, and they own $1.4 billion in assets. Now, I'm not the greatest businessman in the world, but I can see that this business, not we're talking about charter-wide, not any individual one, this business is in trouble. They have less than half the assets that they have, or about half the assets they have in debt. The other point is that 33% of charter school debt is carried by the charter market, and they only educate, I want to say they only, they educate about 16% of Arizona students are in charter schools. Well, that number is both small and big. Charter schools educate 16, public schools educate the rest, assumedly. Charter schools educate 16% of Arizona students. While that's a huge number of schools run by our tax money that, as Jan Nichols just said, we have no oversight of, or very little oversight. And yet this tax money is going to 16 schools. We want to remind everyone that they can find this podcast on vvid.org. We want to talk to everybody. We want to remind them one more time about the Women's March.
It's the third annual Women's March in Sedona, and it's gathering at the National Bank of Arizona, which is 1470 West State Route 89A, next to Whole Foods, Saturday, January 19th, 1 p.m. We're going to march down to our rally site at Vino di Sedona. The march is just about over a mile long. We'll have a pace to accommodate everyone. If you can't march, meet us at the rally. Lots of important discussion at the rally, introducing local organizations that are active on various issues. Holly's going to talk about the Equal Rights Amendment there. And again, just why are women marching? We're marching because there's still so much to accomplish, so much to change. This is a way for the community to come together and voice their demand for change, to stop violence against women, to support reproductive rights, to stop what's happening at the border, separation of families. Education, we just talked about, is a human issue, a women's issue.
Thank you, Kathy. I think that's huge. If we're talking about charter schools this morning, we're talking about women's issues. We're going to be talking about all of the Equal Rights Amendment. All of this will be discussed on Vino de Sedona after the march on the 19th. Please show up. Please come. Please support these important issues. I don't want to introduce a whole new topic at the end of the show, but it really is effective. It isn't a waste of time. There's been a lot of discussion. Why do people march? It's important. Please show up. Support these issues. Democratic Perspective can be found at vvid.org. You can listen to all our wonderful podcasts there.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.